At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey guys, it's Autumn Rain with Beyond the Record, and today I have R&B singer Rex and the Rhythm here with me today. How are you doing today, Rex?
I'm good. How are you feeling?
I'm good. Let's get started about how you found your own way to music.
Oh, geez. you know, I don't know if I really had a choice when it came to being a part of music. My dad was a lead singer. My mom was a backing vocalist.
Okay.
My grandmother was a creative. My grandfather was a marching band drummer. And I always said that music is a gene, and it definitely didn't skip me. So, yeah, I've had music in my household for as long as I can remember. I started playing the drums professionally, well, properly at 14, then guitar and bass. And I guess the rest is history.
I love that. So what is like kind of the story behind your stage name though?
Okay. So I've gone by many names at this point. My real name is T-Ray. So I was in a pop reggae band called Cover Drive for 10 years. Mm-hmm. The band disbanded in 2018, and I took a moment to really figure out if I wanted to continue music because my band did well in the UK. Mm-hmm. We had a number one over there, number three and number nine, wow. Toured a bunch. But after doing all of that and then getting dropped and then becoming solo, you're like, well, do I even want to do music anymore? Like, I've done all these things already.
Yeah.
I took a moment and then I was like, you know what? I'll release some music around 2019-ish. And my Instagram handle was I'm Really a T-Rex. And I was like, that could be a cool artist name. You know, it's esoteric. It's weird. You know, it's me. The SEO was just absolutely horrendous. And whenever I played on stage, I was like, yeah, follow me. I was like, letter I, letter M, really a T-Rex. So like, you know, so I was like, all right, I got to pivot to do something else. I'm a rhythm instrumentalist by trade, so I just kind of took off the I'm really a T, I guess, and just put Rex and the Rhythm and kept it pushing from there. And everyone was like, yeah, that makes sense. I'm like, all right, fantastic. So here we are.
That is way easier, not going to lie. But that was, the first one was really cute, though. So I get it.
Thank you. Thank you. Now it's a chapter that fans can look back on and be like, oh my gosh, remember when I'm really a T-Rex? Mm-hmm. The diehard fans will know the original material. So, yeah.
Right. Just like with Kendrick, like he was K-Dot once. Like everyone has their like, you know.
2 Chainz was Titty Boy. I'm just saying.
That's true.
I'm just saying.
That's true. And he's doing well. So like, who's the same?
Right.
Doesn't matter.
Right. Right.
So you talked a little bit about, you know, being in Cover Drive, which I'm familiar with as well. So how was it being in a group setting and then transitioning into your solo career?
Can I be incredibly candid with you?
Yeah.
I hate it. I hate it so much. Not that I don't enjoy doing my own music, of course.
Yeah.
But when you are part of a four, mm-hmm. There's just so much more comfort that you can find or solace that you can find in opportunities that might be scary. So, okay, say we're playing a festival, right? I know that if I'm feeling a little bit unsteady or nervous, I can look to my bassist and we've been buddies for 10 years. So he's like, yeah, he'll crack a joke and you feel better. It's like partying with your best friends versus partying by yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, you can still have a party by yourself. And I love to party with me. Mm-hmm. Don't get it twisted. But when you are part of a band, it is more fun. That being said, being a solo artist, I have learned so much more than I could have learned in that band.
Ooh.
because you're self-reliant now. So everything kind of rests on you. I now have a band of like seven people and I have to organize them, and it puts you into your CEO mindset. You know, even if it's like band related music stuff, you're still like, okay, this is a business. I don't have to organize these employees and get these songs out on time and hire PR agent and find opportunities for myself and whatnot. So I will say the solo artist experience has been fulfilling, but if I had my way, I'd be in a band.
I see. I think when I interview different artists that have come from that like band setting to becoming a solo artist, I do think that there is, I love that how you were very candid with me and honest about how you felt, because I do think, I would imagine that it is difficult to have all these people that you, and especially for 10 years too, you know?
Yeah, the transition definitely took a little bit of time to, you know, what's the word? To become normalized. Also, I was the drummer in Cover Drive. So even though I did sing as well as drum, I was at the back of the stage. So now being forced to the front of the stage, you're like, man, well, shit. Can I cuss on this?
Yeah, you can.
Okay. I'm like, oh, shit, man. Like, my security blanket is gone. What am I going to do with my hands? There's no instrument for me to play. Mm-hmm. Okay, I guess God is calling me to the front of the line. So I guess I got to figure it out. But like, dang, bro. Little warning, you know.
So when you talk about like your artistic journey, I know that you play like several instruments. So which one did you learn to do first? Did you like find out like you could sing first? Did you like go towards your instruments, or which did you learn to do first?
Well, I was writing and singing first.
Okay.
And it's funny, like in my family, well, in typical families, how you would like measure how tall kids are getting on like the wall or whatever. Yeah. In my family, a marker of age is when you learn how to harmonize with people. So
I started
to learn how to harmonize when I was 11. So we'd be singing with my mom and dad. I sang in choir in school. I'd sometimes sing in church. But I never really desired to be a singer at that age, at least. I just wanted to hit the drums really hard with my friends. And so that was the first main instrument. And I had a lot of fun with that. Around like 16, I think I saw someone do a solo on YouTube. And I was like, that looks really cool. I want to learn to do that. So I taught myself guitar. And then when my band got dropped, we couldn't afford the producers we had access to when we were signed. So we're like, well, we still have a fan base. We still have to make music. So what are we going to do? So I taught myself how to produce, which in turn came with me learning how to play the bass.
Oh, wow.
So, really much first two out of like love, second two out of necessity, because I do believe production is its own instrument. You have to have a different mindset and sensibility going about orchestrating and composing in a box rather than just jamming out loud with an amplifier or whatever, you know. So, yeah, drums, then guitar, then bass. So.
Wow. Okay. Do you have a preference?
Bass is the most fun for me to play.
Okay.
At this stage, just because it's so, you can get so funky with it, you know. I know that it's a bit cliche when it comes to a bass instrument, but just I have so much fun playing that dang thing. Guitar, of course, I mean, they're all fun to play, but just my approach to bass, I definitely enjoy doing that the most. I wouldn't necessarily go out and gig on bass. I mean, I could, but it wouldn't be my first choice of instrument to gig on for somebody else. That would be drums, of course, and then guitar.
Okay. That's interesting. I don't have that much experience. I played like the piano when I was little, and then my sister played the guitar, and my
little sister jam band situation.
Yeah. We would teach each other like our different instruments that we were learning like in school and stuff and like after school classes. So that's only my expertise with that. But
hey,
I love
that
guitar.
Works. That works. The guitar is amazing. I mean, I have my little thing right here. So I always have a guitar nearby, trust and believe.
I love that. You talked a little bit about, you know, you switching into your solo career, but to just go back to being in a group, Like, you had amazing opportunities. Like, you, like, opened for Rihanna and Kelly Clarkson. And then, like, as, like, a solo artist, too, like, you were able to open for Ashanti. So how was it, like, being in proximity to these
artists? I actually have the tour passes from Rihanna and Kelly Clarkson right here.
Really?
I do. I'm just going to get them off my mic stand.
Okay.
But you were asking, how was opening for Ashanti as a solo artist, you said?
Yes, as a solo artist compared to, like, you know, opening for Rihanna and Kelly as, you know, part of a group.
You know, I've done a lot of gigs over my career. I'm close to 1,000 gigs at this point. Wow. And while it's different because it's not me in the band, it's muscle memory, you know?
Okay.
So when I did the Rihanna show, which here's the tour pass. Is it still blurring? Stop blurring. Can you see it? You can see her face kind of. You can see it coming up in the back.
I can see it, yeah.
And then they got the Kelly one here. You know, at that time, you were like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. This is crazy. Like, I was 18 when I was in Cover Drive. You know, I'm 32 right now.
Mm.
So you are caught up in the allure of how big the crowd is, the opportunity, opening for Rihanna. Oh my gosh. She requested us personally. Oh my gosh. And then when you're grown and you're playing a gig, like, oh my gosh, cool. I get to open for Ashanti, but shit, I'm not a little kid anymore. And I'm playing at home in Barbados. I got to get this shit right. Cause they don't know me as an artist by myself.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. So it's just, you lock in differently. I will say I did backing vocals for Shaboozey at Glastonbury.
Yes. Yeah.
And when I went on that stage, I mean, there must have been like 60,000 people in that audience. And it was ridiculous. It looks like a screensaver of people. It was nuts. But when I stood up there, it was like a moment when the experience of big stages and crowds from my Cover Drive experience met working musician me present day. Working musician me pretty much plays in bars and clubs all throughout LA or wherever I get hired. And I've learned how to interact with and how to interface with a smaller audience. And it's been a minute since I've done a show that big. So when I'm standing on the stage, I'm like, oh my gosh, I remember this. Oh, this is weird. It's kind of nostalgic. Okay. Lock in. Don't get distracted. You're on the clock. You're on the clock, you know? So I guess to kind of wrap it all up, yeah, you lock in differently. You lock in differently as a solo artist because also all the mistakes are on you. You know, you can't have, oh, my lead singer hit a bum note. Oh, the bassist missed a note. No, it's me. If my musicians mess up, that's on me. You know, that reflects poorly on me. So, yeah, I'm a little more responsible with it, I guess.
Oh, that's a really good comparison, too. I think that, look, so how did you... So how do you, like, prepare now besides, like, for each event that you are performing at? Like, before, you know, you had your bandmates, you know, could be like, hey, look to her and be like, hey, like, are you good and stuff and check on you. So how do you do that now being a solo artist?
So prepare for gigs in total and, like, in general or, like, right before the show?
I would say, like,
or both.
It could be both, honestly. Yeah.
Preparation for gigs now, I mean, it's more of the same. What I do is that I over rehearse. I make sure that I have the muscle memory down so that I'm focusing more on crowd interaction. So I guess as a singer, muscle memory would just be like, I want to make sure I have my movements down. I want to make sure that these lyrics are at the back of my hand. So I'm not thinking about lyrics when I'm on stage. When I would be drumming and singing, I'm focusing on lyrics primarily because I've already dialed in the groove in my body. So I can kind of autopilot in a sense. Okay. I have a show next week, Thursday. I have a residency at this club out here in Hollywood. And in preparation for that, my approach now is, okay, what have I done before that's been successful? What can I repeat that won't be tiresome to people who might come out and see me again?
Mm-hmm.
What can I add? And who do I look up to in terms of live performances that I can use as a reference? So this weekend, I'll be watching Tiny Desks and festival performances of, like, my favorite artists, like Lenny Kravitz, or if I might watch something of, like, K-Dot, or just a variety of different artists and see how they approach their shows. Be like, okay, I can steal that. Okay, I can steal that. When it comes to before stage, I'm silent. I have to zone in, and I do like a little Rex chant. I go like Rex, who Rex, and I like beat my chest a couple of times, like I'm about to do some hula hula shit or something. And I get myself in the mindset, you know, like everyone has a little bit, their little rituals, but typically I pray, I'm silent, and then I do my little chant thing, and then we go and rock out.
Yeah, that's what I heard that Taylor Swift does that too. Like she doesn't speak before she goes on stage, you know.
Some people can yap before stage. I am not one of those people. Mm-hmm. I tell people I'm extroverted for a living. I'm a professional extrovert, but I'm actually an introvert. So I have to condense my introversion energy into extroversion so I can go and perform, you know.
I feel so seen that you say that. Like, I'm not even joking. Like, I had this conversation with my friends actually not too long ago. I was like, I'm like kind of shy. And they're like,
yeah.
You talk to people for a living. Like, you go to all these events and do all this stuff. Like, how are you shy? I was like, I do it for work. Like, I have the opportunity to just like lay back and chill, like I'm picking that option.
And what your friends don't know is that after the speaking engagement or the performance engagement, you go into your shell, like you just crash right back. You need to recharge. Don't talk to me for a day. Let me just, I'm gonna be in my sweats. Like, just let me get back to normal, please.
Yes, like, yeah, there's like, I want to be comfy. I don't want to wear makeup. I just want to chill. But you know, for work, obviously, that's not really like an option. And that's fine, too. There's aspects of performing that you really love. There are aspects of like, you know, doing interviews that I really love. I love talking to people and storytelling and stuff. But, you know, sometimes you got to sit back, recharge a little bit. So
not sometimes, so oftentimes, deep. Oftentimes.
Yeah. Yes. Oh my God. So I want to talk about your latest single, Without You. So what was the inspiration behind that?
You know, it's plagued me a bit in recent times, but I'm a lover boy when it comes to songwriting. And a lot of my songs that I've released today are about loves that go wrong or just kind of the fallout that happens post a love going wrong or a romantic situation going wrong. Mm-hmm. So in this particular instance, this song, while yes, is about a love going sour and kind of just the, oh shit. Like I didn't think I'd be single again. I thought this was it, you know. But I wrote this as a pitch to Anderson .Paak initially.
Okay.
I had an opportunity come through. So Anderson's looking for songs and a Silk Sonic kind of vibe. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I love Anderson .Paak. I get, okay, bet, let's go. Mm-hmm. I had this track that I had made in 2023. Mm-hmm. And I sent it to my producer and he's like, yeah, this could work. Like, write to it. And I'm like, all right, bet. Whenever I'm writing for an artist, I do some like light research. I'll see like, okay, what are they posting? What are their captions like? What kind of headlines are surrounding them? I might go on TMZ and be like, what gossip surrounding them? You know?
Right.
So when I saw for Addison, it was like, oh, he's going through a divorce. I was like, oh shit. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Andy, that sucks, bro. But yeah. I'm going through a breakup, so we can reason.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
So I was studying kind of Silk Sonic chord movements. And I noticed in a lot of those soul songs, it's a 2-chord progression. So I was like, okay. Oh, someone's asking if I'm playing music. Yes, Zoom, I am. I was like, okay. So that sounds like not sadness, happy sadness in a sense. Because I was outside in the process of writing the song, going through my breakup, and it was a hot day. And I was like, damn, like I'm really not feeling the sun right now. I'm just up in my head. Just thinking about this chick. Oh, that could be a lyric. No, I don't feel the sunshine anymore. I was like, okay, cool. That could work.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kept pushing from there. And a couple iterations, a couple lyric changes, a couple arguments with my manager for simplifying my lyrics. Mm-hmm. And Without You was done probably 2024. And then I just sat on it.
Okay.
A lot of the songs I've released I've released to date, or I'm releasing now. I wrote like a year and a half ago, and I'm now getting around to putting them out. And honestly, with this song, you hear a song too many times, you're like, shit, I don't even know if people are gonna like this. Like, I liked it when I first made it, but will people actually enjoy it now? Like, has the moment passed? Mm-hmm. And people have been loving it. And I'm like, oh, great. It's amazing. I can't hear it anymore. I've listened to it 1,000 times, but I'm glad you guys can, you know?
Yeah, no, I love it. I love songs like that. Even when I'm not in that, you know, state of mind, I think it's just like the lyricism. And I'm always interested to know, like, what kind of tactics do you use to like convey those emotions when you're writing them down? Like, how do you not be like too vulnerable, you might think?
I think, well, someone once told me that the songs you're scared to write are the ones you should be writing. And also, one thing I learned, at least in my songwriting journey, is that your whatever you're going through, your experience is not individualized. You know, everyone knows what heartbreak feels like. Everyone's been done dirty by an ex, or has done someone dirty unintentionally. Everyone has had to deal with the fallout. So my approach is just to be honest. And if it's a little too vulnerable, then I might keep it in the archives. But if it hits that happy medium of like vulnerability meets like relatability, I'm like, okay, cool. We can see. But typically in my experience, even when I'm more vulnerable in songs, people respond well to it. Yeah, I guess one of my favorite writers is John Mayer. And there is a level of escapism that I experience when I listen to his music. When I'm just like, damn, John, you went through that too? Like, shit, I get it. I get it, bro. Like, you see me.
Yes,
you see me, right?
Yeah.
So I'm trying to elicit that response in my listeners who have listened to my music with whatever I release.
I love that. I love it. Who are you? I know you did a couple name drops during this conversation, but who are some artists that you really do just like look up to and inspire your career to be like?
Well, I'm definitely on a Lenny kick right now.
Lenny.
I always thought he was such a dope ass dude. And then I saw him live this year and I was like, bro, this is what I want to look like when I'm 60. Like, you know, like just full leather and electric guitar. Like, are you kidding me?
Right.
So Lenny for sure. Big fan of Sting. Love Sting songwriting. Love John Mayer's songwriting and his touch on guitar. Bruno Mars. Adore his capacity for performance. I love his approach to songwriting. He takes incredibly deep concepts and makes them so palatable. It's a lot of people don't understand how hard it is to write deep things simply. Bruno has that down to a science. Just, I mean, Die with a Smile, all the Silk Sonic stuff. I'm like, bro, what are you smoking? Like, do they sell at the dispensary down the road? Like, can I get me some? Anderson .Paak, another one. I mean, Silk Sonic, I adore. Those are the main artists that I look up to right now. I mean, as a musician, there's a plethora of artists that I enjoy listening to and take inspiration from. But in terms of like my Mount Rushmore as of right now, like Bruno, Andy, Lenny, John, Sting, like those guys are doing it. And of course, sorry, my mentor, Uncle Eddie Grant. He has helped me so much in my career. So I gotta put him up there as well.
Yeah, no, those are really, really good picks. I think that all of those artists like evoke some type of emotion from you when you're listening to their music. And I think that's what Without You does for me as well. So what is something that, what is something that fans can like look forward to with like your new music that's coming out? Because I want to hear it. Now that you got all the stuff in the vault, like, what are you talking about? It's insane.
I have a new song I want to drop in like November. Okay. So that one's a vibe. I think you'd enjoy that one too. What I want fans to look forward to, I mean, I'm gonna keep growing as I release. This has all been a learning experience for me. So the music I might have released as I'm Really a T-Rex Well, not might have. The music I released back then does not sound like what I released now. But my, well, at least in my perspective, the journey of a songwriter is to capture life through the individual's perspective, through the many seasons of their lives. Mm. You know, so as I grow, as I mature, my songwriting will change. As I find what's more of me, the sounds will change. But what you can expect to remain consistent is that it's going to be funky. It's going to be rhythmic. I'm a sprinkling off the elbow, Caribbean influence, of course.
Yes.
And I'm just honing the sword, really. Because like in a band, you have people to bounce ideas off of. I'm in here by myself. This is my studio. You can't see stuff because it's blurred, but I'd be in this room creating in a circle. I just hop instruments. Sometimes I'll change which instrument I start on because I think differently on different instruments.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so wow. if I'm doing a song from the drum set first, I'm thinking like bam breaks, bam. If I'm doing on guitar, then it's going to be a lot more melancholic singer songwriter. If I'm going off a bass, I'm going to try and make some come down and some pack type shit, you know. So yeah, fans can expect it to remain funky, it to remain rhythmic, and it to get better as time progresses. That's my goal, to keep one-upping myself. That's my main competition, me.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I want to know too, like with that next, like as you've entered this like next phase of your artistic journey, I want to know, since you have so many like performances, like what are the next, like performance history? Like what's your next performance going to look like? Like where can fans like catch you?
Well, I'm performing next. I don't know when this airs, but I'm performing mm-hmm. September 18th at the Black Rabbit Rose in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
I have a residency there mm-hmm. Every second Tuesday they moved me this week, but I'm typically the second Thursday of the month.
Okay.
Outside of that, I perform at Anderson Paak's Bar on Saturdays mm-hmm. With this band called The Midnight Delight. So most Saturdays you can find me there. And outside of that, I'm just trying to get on someone's support tour slot so I can be at a city near whoever likes my stuff. Honestly, I'm finding the steps in the right direction. I have my vision board and whatnot, and I'm just letting God direct me as I walk forward, you know?
Yes. So who would you say would be like a perfect person for, because I have someone in mind. I think he has already people for his support, because I think his tour starts in November. Okay. But I was thinking Leon Thomas, but by the way.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I can absolutely open for him.
Yeah, but absolutely. Who would you love to open for?
I would love to open for Anderson .Paak, mm-hmm. of course. Bruno, of course. Lucky Day. Love Lucky Day.
I can see that.
Would love to open for him as well. But honestly, I mean, Cover Drive was a Caribbean pop band, and we opened for Kelly Clarkson for 8 dates across Europe.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't make sense. So I'm leaving the door open, no pun intended. I'm leaving the door open for whatever people feel makes sense. Like if someone says, oh yeah, I'm a rock band, but you got a little bit of rock in your set, cool, come open for me.
Mm-hmm.
Why not? Why not? You know, this journey, at least for me, has been so random. I can have an idea of how things are going to transpire. And then they actually happen. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, how did we get here? I'll give you a quick little tidbit, not tidbit story.
Yeah.
The Kelly Clarkson tour, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when I was 16, we got signed and I moved to London. We were signed to Polydor Records. Mm-hmm. Before we moved to London, we actually did a showcase for our A&R at my Uncle Eddie Grant's estate. Mm. And so we would rehearse there often and we showcased for the guy. He loved us, yada, yada, yada. But outside of that, we just rehearsed by Uncle Eddie all the time. He'd watch us say, yeah, fix that, fix that, fix that, fix that. One day, Uncle Eddie says, oh, I'm going to go grab a friend and I'm going to come back. And we're like, all right, cool. And we suck at this point, honestly. Like, we're just teenagers, boom, 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 making all kind of random noise.
Mm-hmm.
Uncle Eddie comes back with two people. He comes back with some random guy named Rod, this British guy, and Robert Plant from Led Zeppelin, because he just has rock star friends that come and visit him in Barbados. And no, crazy shit. Because crazy people that go to that house, like the Rolling Stones went to his house. My grandma used to cook for them. The Police used to go by his house. My grandma used to cook for them. All these people. Anyhow, so we're sucking in Uncle Eddie's like basement area. You know, Robert Plant walks in. Says, "Oh, nice to meet y'all. Y'all sound all right." And his friends say, "Yeah, y'all sound okay." They go to the gazebo. We finish rehearsing. Go up there. We meet Rod. Talk to him for half a second. Rod gives us his card. We forget about it. Right. Mm. 3 years down the line, we're at our label and we get an email saying, "Oh, Kelly wants you to open for her across her European tour." So we accept, of course. We meet Kelly finally, and we're like, "Kelly, how the hell did you find out about us?" Like the contrast is stark. She said, "Oh, well, my agent met you in Barbados 3 years ago, thought you'd be a good fit." I'm saying.
That's so crazy.
You really never know. The Rihanna gig is because her little cousin used to watch our like YouTube series and told her about us. And she's like, "Oh yeah, I want that to open for us." So,
babe.
Girl, I just show up. I just show up, man. At this point, I can't dictate or anticipate what's going to happen next. So I just make sure I'm prepared and I'm ready for whatever comes my way.
Yeah, I think that's why that you've gotten the opportunities, like let alone just the talent part aside, it's just that you're prepared for these situations. Yeah. Like if you're not prepared, you're not going to go nowhere. If you're not putting yourself out there, you're not going to go nowhere. So you are doing all of those things. And that's why I just can't wait to see you on someone's tour, doing your own tour.
Oh, you'll see it. Oh, you'll definitely see it. I have no doubt. So you'd be like, "Oh, shit. Yeah." And I'll be like, "Autumn, you want front row tickets? What's up?"
Yes. Absolutely. I will be there. So you got to let me know. I'm in Jersey, though. So.
Oh, well, I got family in Maryland, so I'm sure an East Coast tour will happen eventually.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. So where can everyone follow you to keep up with all of your new releases?
Okay, well, the easiest one is follow me on Instagram at callhimrex. Mm-hmm. Easy peasy. Mm-hmm. The Gen Zers and my younger brothers tell me I have to be on the TikTok, I think they call it. So if you want to follow me on that, it's callhimrex, because call him wasn't available. Okay. I have a website with some information on me, rexatr.com, but Instagram is your best bet to find everything happening with me. And Without You's out now on all streaming platforms. So check that out.
Thank you. It was so nice speaking with you today.
Likewise. From introvert to introvert, you do very well the extrovert thing.
Thank you. Same here. Thank you.